You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. We have taken our show, and as LeBron James might call it, our talents on the road tonight. We are 200 miles east from our flagship AM radio station in Memphis this evening. We are broadcasting to you from Nashville, Tennessee, on Music Valley Drive from the 2014 Council of Conservative Citizens National Conference. And we have gotten we've gotten some good people in this room tonight. Let's hear a good old-fashioned rebel yell. All right, everybody, TPC and CFCC house this evening, and I want to do it one more time because, again, I can't say enough about this fellow, our featured guest. We're going to have many featured guests in the third hour tonight. The third hour, we're going to be bringing everybody up that wants to come up and talk about their organization, their work, and we've certainly got some notable heroes in the crowd. People have really paid the price and done good work for years and years and years. But before we get to those, we had one call-in guest tonight, and it was, of course, Sean Bergen of News 12 up in the New York, New Jersey area, a reporter who was dismissed after his editorializing of a story involving a black teen. He was just a teen. We can't say he was black. Well, we can, but they didn't. But he was black, and he shot a police officer, and Bergen went off script and shared with his audience on television his thoughts, and he was dismissed after that. He's made two appearances on the Political Cesspool since then. He's working with Anthony Cumia, who was on our show a couple of weeks ago quite famously. And again, at the risk of sounding repetitious, I really want to hear it one more time for Sean Bergen, everybody. Well, we're going to keep on with the Ferguson, Missouri situation there. We had one of our guys, Matt the Copperhead, regular contributor and caller to this show. Our man in Havana, as Keith Alexander has called him. He actually got the itch to drive up to Ferguson, Missouri himself a couple of days after the shooting and scout out the scene. And he's going to give us an eyewitness report tonight. So, Matt the Copperhead here on the Political Cesspool. What'd you see up in Ferguson, my friend?
Well, James, Keith, and the Cesspool family around the world, I went to Ferguson on the 12th of this week, and I had to see for myself what was going on, boots on the ground. I rolled into Ferguson around 10:30 in the morning, and as soon as I parked, found parking, found the news trucks, went right into the firehouse there, and I saw a man standing there, a white man, with a blazer and khakis. Turned out he was the mayor, and I got in line to interview this mayor. I was in line, and I saw these other two men, two black men. One was a pastor at a local church. One was a younger gentleman, and he called himself a community activist. So I said, I just have to start. I started chatting away with these guys, and we were next in line to interview the Honorable James Knowles III. And I have to take my hat off to this particular mayor, James Knowles III. Well spoken, under tremendous stress, was able to articulate his points of what he felt the community was, and rebutted both the concerns of the pastor and this young community activist. Basically, the beef is that there's not enough black cops. And the mayor explained that there's six black officers, one of which is on active duty in the Army, and three Pacific Islanders and one Latino. So a total of 10 cops out of 30 cops. It's not too bad. And we also had an interview with Al Jazeera America. I doubt if it's going to be aired, but y'all might want to be keeping watch for that. And then went on few hours later, there was a interview with Police Chief Jackson of Ferguson PD, and we basically had a question and answer session. There was a lot of liberals, a lot of provocateurs, the usual suspects, so to speak. In fact, one of the so-called journalists had asked him about an implementation of a no-fly zone, and just at that moment, an F-15 Eagle screamed by. So I said, so much for the no-fly zone. And I was onto the flank of the police chief during the interview, and he had his detail of his personnel, his police officers, that made a protective detail behind him, and I was standing on the side. And after the interview, a reporter from the Huffington Post came up to me and started interviewing me and was asking me questions and about, you know, what is the police force? And he asked me, you know, what is my name? Officer such and such. I said, no, I'm Matt the Copperhead. At this, he looked a bit annoyed and turned around and headed towards the McDonald's. And I guess the rest is history. He wound up getting arrested, which is quite unfortunate. If he would have stayed and had an interview with a Copperhead, maybe things would have turned out different for him. Yeah, his name was Ryan Riley. I feel sorry for the man, actually. So basically, the usual suspects were there, white, liberal, communist antagonizers who were stirring the population up, both black and white.
And he's not joking in that description, folks. I actually was amazed when I got texted to my cell phone video footage of Matt the Copperhead standing there in the middle of the press corps in the press conference of this mayor. But in addition to that video that he sent, he was also mistaken for a police officer. And the Huffington Post, the Huffington Post reporter thought you were the community liaison or for the police department there in Ferguson. And he goes, no, I'm not with the police department. I'm Matt the Copperhead. And so he said, yeah, he encouraged the reporter, if he wanted a hot story, to look up the story of Sean Bergen and report on that. But nevertheless, I mean, so here's the Copperhead in the thick of it, and he's not joking about these people being communists. You sent me a picture in addition to the press conference you sent me, the Chum Lee of communism. It was this guy, this, I guess, 30-something-year-old white person with a long hair. Hails from his mommy's basement, and he was wearing a Karl Marx T-shirt with the hammer and sickle. So when we say that it's radical leftists and communists supporting our opposition, we're not kidding about that, folks. I mean, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck and so on and so forth. Yeah, so Matt the Copperhead, citizen reporter is what he is, and he was up there in Ferguson getting the news, and that's how it should be. And he's reported it not on just on this show now, but with Sam Bushman on the Liberty Roundtable show a few days ago. And it's great stuff. I mean, this is what we need.
Well, the thing that struck me most about Matt's presentation was the first thing that he said. He said that the mayor seemed like a very decent individual, but he seemed to be under intense pressure. And that's the whole problem in a nutshell. Why should the mayor of a town that is subject to a race riot feel that he is under intense pressure? The rioters should be the people that feel that they're under intense pressure. Somehow something's wrong here. We're going to explore that in more detail after these words from our sponsors.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211 or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center. Where heritage and responsibility instill character. Where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental. Where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to our live broadcast from the Council of Conservative Citizens 2014 National Conference in Nashville, Tennessee. We've got one more segment here with citizen reporter and political cesspool correspondent Matt the Copperhead. And then after that, we're going to go to Brad Griffin of Occidental Descent. He's going to talk more about this situation in Ferguson as well. He has in-laws up there about 12 miles from the unpleasantries or unpleasantness, I guess you would say. And we're also going to be talking about a rally that he recently participated in Oxford, Mississippi. That's coming up after our next commercial break. But first, back to the Copperhead. I'm going to read just a couple of lines here from a Los Angeles Times report on the situation in Ferguson. What touched off the outcry near St. Louis, you may ask? Well, according to the Los Angeles Times, it was this. Michael Brown, an unarmed 18-year-old, was about to begin college, was shot multiple times. Times Saturday afternoon in a confrontation with a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, a St. Louis suburb. What do witnesses say happened? A friend of Brown's told Fox News that he and Brown were walking in the street when the police officer pulled up. The officer told him to get the F off the sidewalk, he recounted. Johnson said the officer then reached out of the car window and grabbed Brown by the neck. Another witness said that she saw the police chase Brown. He ran for his life, she said. They shot him in the back, and he fell. He put his arms up to let them know that he was compliant, and he was unarmed, and they shot him twice more until he died. So, I mean, this is what, you know, the facts of the case, this angelic cherub, you know, just like Trayvon Martin, he was unarmed. Just because he wasn't packing heat at the time of the incident does not mean he was not breaking a law, obviously, to say the least. Police, of course, have a different story, and who are you going to trust? I mean, in this situation, who would you trust? We know now that he was, if not currently initiated in the Bloods gang, he was working his way up there. The robbery that he committed just minutes before the shooting probably didn't help his case, but according to St. Louis County Police Chief, Brown was walking with a friend in the middle of the street when a Ferguson police officer tried to exit his vehicle. Brown pushed the officer back onto the police car, then entered the car and struggled with the officer in an effort to get his weapon. A shot was fired inside the car, and then the fatal shooting occurred shortly after that. So, yeah, I'm going to believe the police on this one. I'm definitely going to believe the police on this one, and we're going to talk more about this during this segment and the following one. Then we're going to shift gears and have a lot more fun and a variety of topics. But, Keith, I'm going to toss it over to you for a second, and then we're going to the Copperhead has a few more things and personal anecdotes that he'd like to share with us about this story.
Well, again, it's reminiscent of the Trayvon Martin situation. You have a black perp who is portrayed as one of the Cosby kids, basically, by the media. And then when you see a picture of him, he's this hulking 6.5-foot guy, looks like an NFL lineman or something. And he doesn't just look threatening. We see from the video footage of his robbery at the convenience store that he actually is very threatening. He picked up an individual by the scruff of the neck by his collar and just picked him up and threatened him as he walked out of the convenience store with a box of cigars. Now, then he's going down the street, and it's obvious the policeman stopped him because he was walking in the middle of the street. And he thought that he was being apprehended for the robbery he just committed, and then reacted like a typical guilty person does. Well, they say a guilty man flees when no one pursues. Well, this man fought because he thought he was under arrest or about to be arrested, and he assaulted a police officer. And one of the first things that my parents, and I think everybody else's parents, taught you is that when you are stopped by the police, you should smile every chance you get. You don't try to confront the policeman. You certainly don't try to fight with the policeman. And if you do, you're liable to wind up dead. This individual did fight with the policeman, apparently fought all the way into his police car. And the policeman obviously felt threatened. Anybody would have felt under those circumstances. And that's not the type of thing that, apparently the police are supposed to have a double standard when they are assaulted by a black perpetrator, particularly a black male teenage perpetrator. They're supposed to react in an entirely different way than they would for any other perpetrator. And of course, that's not going to happen. You know, you can be killed just as, in fact, even more likely killed under these circumstances than any other. So consequently, I think our police have a right to protect themselves. But, you know, I've been listening to the news coverage on Fox News and other places. They're talking with black ministers, with black community activists, and they're just doubling down on this. They are even more insistent now that Michael Brown was innocent and pure as driven snow, and that things just are not squaring, Matt. What's going on here?
Well, Keith, you know, we've heard the black community side, and we really haven't heard the cop side yet, but it'll all come out in the wash. I wanted to make a point of seeing other communities' sides. Made an active point at lunchtime to go to a Chinese restaurant, scope out the scene, see what the Asian community had to say about it.
This is in
Ferguson. This is in Ferguson, sir. That's correct. And along the way, I happened to meet with this white landscaper who's taking care of the grounds there and chatted with him for a bit. And he said, man, things are bad. I'm just hoping I don't get another shot today. I do my 8 and I'm out before dusk. I said, brother, I hear you. Let me, I'm all ears. Tell me what's going on. And he actually stated, this is unconfirmed and unsubstantiated, I'm just going by what he said, that a close friend of his was shot, a white gal was shot in a drive-by one of the nights of the rioting this past week. And, of course, if this is true, our thoughts and prayers go out to her and her family. All the best. And also, you know, this is just an undercurrent of what's going on in these situations of... Also happen to see the Latino community. I mean, this might be the cure for illegal immigration because they were fixing to get out of town. They were all packing up and they were packing up and heading out. So, yeah, just a bad scene all around, and this is just becoming indicative of where our nation's going through balkanization.
The thing that is so amazing to me is the fecklessness of our leadership, of the mayor, of the police chief, and other people. Basically... Okay, what you're seeing here is people totally cowed by political correctness, to the point that they're really not able to effectively govern and police their own city. It's no action, I think, that the only businesses that seemed to be safe, as we heard in that first segment, were businesses that were being guarded by the owners of those buildings wielding their own firearms. I guess this is the ultimate argument in favor of the wisdom of the Founding Fathers in passing the Second Amendment. Apparently, the only people you can, even though you have policemen dressed like they are special op forces with tanks and Kevlar helmets and body armor, and things like this, they're totally ineffective to protect the businesses of the citizens of Ferguson, Missouri. They have to resort to themselves and their own firearms to protect their property. Now, what's wrong with this picture? What is paralyzing the police force from enforcing the law against lawbreakers like the rioters in Ferguson?
You make a very good point there, Keith. Another point is you go to the Aldi and you have armed guards with 9mm pistols. Is that average America? Is this what average America is going to become? Is this like the Reverend Jackson saying, you could have the next Ferguson in your town? I mean, this is before the shooting. You have armed guards at every entrance of, be it the Aldi, the Food Lion, and that was good. All the best, people.
We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back with more when Brad Griffin of OccidentalDescent.com joins us as our next guest here as the parade rolls on tonight on the Political Cesspool Radio program.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the Political Cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to tonight's live remote broadcast of the Political Cesspool from Nashville, Tennessee, everybody. You can tell Brian in the front row wasn't there on that holler. Brian, give us a holler from the back of the room. That sounded about right. Okay. Well, we got Brad Griffin. I'm going to shake the hand of Brad Griffin, the owner, operator, editor of OccidentalDescent.com. And I was talking with Brad and his lovely wife last night about this situation in Ferguson. So, I mean, we almost exhausted it, but not quite yet. I want to just get your thoughts, anything that hasn't been mentioned yet on the air or something you'd like to even reiterate about your take on the situation in Ferguson.
Just a few months ago after the Ameren conference, me and my wife, we went to back to where she's from in St. Louis and St. Charles. We traveled through Illinois, and my wife didn't want to stop to get gas in Illinois because of the gas taxes. Well, we were almost running out of gas, and we had to stop in North County, North St. Louis, and lo and behold, if it wasn't a QT gas station, this was just a few months ago after the Ameren conference, and we stopped there, and I just got a menacing bad vibe about that gas station. And what's unusual about it is that, you know, I live in a very heavily black area in Alabama, and I've been through Birmingham, I've been through Atlanta, but something about what happened in St. Louis just rubbed me the wrong way. And I remember we were leaving that gas station, me and Renee, we were headed out to her parents' house, and they said that, and I looked around and I said to her, you know, one day there's going to be something bad's going to happen here at this gas station. And I don't believe it was that exact one. It was a QT right down the street. And all I heard is I looked on Facebook and the QT was up in flames, and I was like, who could have ever predicted that? yeah. And, it's just, I've been following what's going on, and today, the video came out or I believe it was yesterday, the video of him robbing the gas station, and I wasn't surprised. There's nothing at all that's surprising me. Here you go, Keith.
So in other words, you think this whole area was a powder keg just waiting for a source of ignition to go up. Is that right?
That's correct. I often joke on my blog. We talk about how we joke about, you know, doomsday scenarios, and I like to think of I call it the day the EBT card stops working. And it's like what would happen in North County, St. Louis, 2 days after EBT quit working? It would be much worse than this, I think.
Well, we look now at the facts. And the facts of this story, as they become more apparent, it was that this guy was a thug. Now, did he deserve to die for being a thug? No. But did he deserve to die if he jumped into a police car and tried to rob an officer of his gun? I think that's a justifiable shooting. I don't like to see anybody die. I wish he hadn't acted that way, and I certainly wish he was still alive, just like I wish Trayvon Martin was still alive, so we didn't have to go through the misery of this white guilt forced upon us in the media. But, you know, so you have the robbery there at the gas station. Now, do you know, I mentioned, and I was under the impression that it was almost immediately before the shooting. Is that correct, or was that something that happened days before? Or you can just tell me, because I'm not sure exactly how far in advance. I think it was the same day, too. So, and they say, you know, at least Trayvon paid for his Skittles. You know, we were talking about that last night. But nevertheless, so this guy robbed a gas station immediately before the shooting occurred, but the narrative from the media is that he was some saintly figure, and we've got white racist police officers taking out their racism on unarmed teens, as if shooting him in the back, and so on and so forth. This guy was flashing signs for the Blood Gang, you know, the violent black bloods. You got the video of the robbery. And this is getting no play in the media. Yeah, it's been mentioned, but it's not changing the course of the narrative. The way this is still being interpreted was white-on-black racism. And, yeah, so he robbed the gas station. We mentioned that, but we're not focusing on it by any stretch. And, you know, and the rioting continues. And that's another thing. I mean, this is something that hasn't changed since the 60s. White people are responsible for the bad behavior of black people. No matter what they do, the racism of white people is their excuse, the supposed racism of white people. So the logic is something happens that they don't like, and then they destroy their own neighborhoods in retaliation and film themselves, in this case, laughing while doing so. They're burning up their own stores. They're burning up and rioting and pillaging in their own neighborhoods. And it just makes no sense to me. But again, that's nothing new. They've been doing that. That's been the MO for 60 years in the South in the 60s, when the police officers and the sheriffs would try to enforce the law. They would do these things. And so that's one area in which they've been consistent. But as we stated earlier, the narrative to these stories are already written in advance, and they just do a little plug and play. And in this case, you know, the names and the scenario change, but the narrative remains the same. A state of emergency has been issued now. And I'll ask you, Brad, I mean, what can the government do? I mean, you would say you send in the National Guard to disperse the uprising, but what can they do other than politely ask these black malcontents, these rioters, to stop? Obviously, you can't enforce the law. Obviously, you can't use force because it's racist, right? So I don't see, you know, you've given them a free pass to engage in this behavior, and the media glorifies it and coddles them as if it's somewhat justified. Now, if the cop was wrong in the shooting, let the facts present that and let him pay the price. But no matter what really happened, and I certainly don't think that was the case, but even if that was the case, it doesn't excuse this behavior. This is outlandish behavior. It's what you get in a multicultural and diverse area. This is the manifestation of diversity in its full force. And I don't know what they can do except let it run its course, because if they send in police, if they send in more authority figures, what can they do? We already saw what happened when one cop did what he had to do, and the results were predictable.
Okay, what I would add to that is, James, is we've seen this same script how many times? I'm sure you remember the saint who was the Duke lacrosse stripper,
right?
The one who's in prison right now for murdering her boyfriend, mm-hmm. or I'm sure you remember our friend Rodney King, who they burned down Los Angeles in the early 1990s. Rodney King, I believe he died recently. A drunk, he passed out and fell in a pool and drowned to death. How many times was Rodney King arrested for reckless and drunk driving after the Los Angeles riots? Well, the media always makes these martyrs of these people. They don't even look into their background, and we've seen it fall apart time and time again, but not without tremendous destruction of property and loss of life, and destruction of our civil liberties and terrible racial animus.
And Brad, you bring up a good point in mentioning Rodney King. So those riots that occurred as a result of that scenario in 1992 caused over $1 billion in property damage. $1 billion of property damage, and those people were seen as the good guys. I mean, when you look at it the way that it was presented by the establishment media, those people were the righteous freedom fighters. Those were the ones that were, you know, standing up against white racism. And they're completely given a pass.
I think we need to also just hit the nail on the head on this, gentlemen. The problem isn't multiculturalism. It is political correctness and white guilt, which is being inflicted upon the mayor, on the police chief, on the entire police force of Ferguson. And this is what paralyzes society's response and prevent society from responding appropriately to this type of criminal behavior. This is why the police can be decked out in full body armor and still can't do anything, because they're frozen, they're paralyzed with fear. If they dare enforce the law, they're liable to be the next George Zimmerman. They're liable to be sitting in the dock being tried, supposedly, for some type of crime, and their crime is that they're trying to discharge the duty they have sworn to do, which is enforce the law and the Constitution. This is the problem in America today. We have a liberal news media that is enforcing politically correct standards on behavior, which basically undermines the rule of law and the moral order in the United States of America today. That's what we're seeing played out in Ferguson, Missouri, if you ask me.
Well, and I hate to say it, but I think by the time the media, not necessarily, well, it'll be interesting to see if this officer faces charges for what I believe was an act of self-defense, if he has to stand trial for that. I hate that this has happened to that officer. I think by the time the media gets done with him, and I think George Zimmerman can relate, this officer is going to wish that he had been killed. I think Zimmerman, in a perverse reasoning, Zimmerman and this officer would have been better off had they been killed by their the black assailants. But we're going to take a break and talk more about it with Brad Griffin and find out what happened in Oxford, Mississippi, when the political cesspool rolls on tonight in Nashville, Tennessee.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like their green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 Moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Welcome back to Hit On The Show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to the Political Cesspool. We got all the loud people in the back of the room now. What are y'all doing back there? All right. Well, we got Brad Griffin of Occidental Descent. That is OccidentalDescent.com, by the way. And we were talking about this surveillance video of the saintly cherub Mike Brown robbing the convenience store. And that is there. You can watch that video courtesy of YouTube at Brad's website, OccidentalDescent.com. We also have had two or three stories posted to thepoliticalcesspool.org our official internet headquarters this week about the scenario in near St. Louis, I should say. And I'm just going to read a paragraph from this, and then we're going to shift gears. This will be a summation. I think we've spent at least an hour on this topic now for this live remote, which is unusual, but it is a big story. Michael McGregor for had an uncle, by the way, named Michael McGregor. But Michael McGregor of Radix Journal writes that the police killing of a black man has turned a St. Louis suburb into a place where chaos reigns. Rioting predictably broke out after a memorial service for the slain 18-year-old Mike Brown, and the black participants went straight to the supermarkets to loot and pillage, setting one ablaze. Also predictably, the mass media began sympathetically portraying those and protesters as folks against injustice and ignored their ransacking of local stores. Wherever the truth is behind the shooting of Brown, we know that our guardians of culture will mark it down as another injustice done to blacks by whites. Like Rodney King, Trayvon Martin, and Tawana Brawley, who has been brought up here by our esteemed guest, the facts don't matter as long as there's a media narrative to promote the continuation of racial injustice in America. And the article only gets better from there, and you can read it at thepoliticalcesspool.org tonight. But with that, we're going to shift gears from the situation in Ferguson and talk to Brad Griffin, who was a man on the streets and an eyewitness as to the situation in Oxford, Mississippi a couple of days ago, or a few days ago now, I guess it's been. What's been going on in Oxford, and why were you there? Why did you take your activism on the road?
Well, the situation in Oxford is just really a continuation of what's been going on in Ole Miss for years now. It started back in the early 1990s when the university removed the Confederate battle flag to appease just the people who wanted to make Ole Miss more PC. They banned Dixie at football games. There's been a series of things. And 4 years ago in 2010, Colonel Reb was replaced by a politically correct mascot, a black bear at Ole Miss. And I was really irritated by that. I really have been outraged about that ever since. But in recent days, there's been announcements by, I think it's Chancellor Dan Jones, that Ole Miss was going to do even more politically correct stuff. They were going to rename Confederate Drive, and they were going to put markers to explain Confederate monuments all over campus in PC terms. And even crazier that the school was considering dropping the name Ole Miss itself, because some people believe that Ole Miss is a reference to a plantation mistress. And so that's why there was an event. It wasn't organized by us. It was organized by a group called the Mid-South Flaggers, and they were going to go march out there in Oxford with Confederate battle flags, and I've been wanting to go out there for years, and I just went out there and joined them. Here you go, Keith.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. Basically what they did about the Confederate flag, which was the first salvo in the culture war against the South and Southern symbols. Sam Francis, the late great Sam Francis, wrote extensively about this, and he predicted exactly where all this was going to lead, and so far his blueprint has been absolutely accurate. They didn't ban the Confederate flag. They banned sticks in the consequently, there was no way to wave a rebel flag anymore in the stadium. And, of course, that was one of the great signature scenes from an Ole Miss football game. If you look back in the Manning era and earlier, you'll see a sea of Confederate flags waving back and forth at all Ole Miss games, and particularly the big ones like the one between Archie Manning of Ole Miss and Scott Hunter of Alabama back in 1969, which was the first nationally televised late-night football game, college football game in America. Now, let me tell you first it was the Confederate flag, then they stopped playing Dixie, which was like the unofficial fight song of the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss, and I predicted that Ole Miss and the name Ole Miss Rebels were ultimately going to fall to this relentless, almost Leninist march in rewriting history at Ole Miss. Everything that was distinctive about Ole Miss is being destroyed systematically by the politically correct people who are, engineering this change. They always get a compliant chancellor. That, in fact, I think the willingness to destroy the old Ole Miss must be written somewhere into the job description of being the chancellor or the head of the University of Mississippi now, because they have had a succession of chancellors who seem bound and determined to destroy everything that made that university distinctive and attractive in the past. They're not going to rest, I guess, until they rename the place the Marxist-Leninist Institute of Mississippi. Now, this is culture war, folks, and this is, it may seem trivial to some people, and particularly people that aren't particularly interested in the University of Mississippi or Ole Miss, but this is just the beginning. This is the camel's nose in the tent. The next thing you know, the American flag is going to be under assault. American heroes, American symbols generally, patriotic references to America's past, to America's founding, they're already under attack. This is a relentless culture war that's being waged against traditional American society. And as Sam Francis said, the Confederacy is going to be the first casualty, and it's going to be the canary in the coal mine that shows us what's going to happen to the rest of our culture unless we wake up and take countermeasures.
I believe that's absolutely right, and there's nothing much I can add to that. I've seen it progressing for years, and even though I'm an Auburn graduate, I felt compelled to go to Ole Miss's campus and take a stand for what's happening out there. And just think of it, Keith. If you had to rename every single historical monument or street or anything that's named after anybody who can be remotely construed as racist in Mississippi, where would you stop? I mean, how many towns would lose their names? It's terrible. I mean, you'd have to rename Washington itself to.
That's right.
Because George Washington was a slave owner and a racist too.
Well, it's not only that. I'm waiting for Archie Manning to have to prostrate himself and tearfully explain away his supposed guilt of attending Ole Miss back in the days when they were still flying the Confederate flag and playing Dixie at the football games. You know, this will never end, this self-flagellation that is inflicted. It's just like Stalinist show trials back in the days of Stalin back in the 30s. They basically had these public trials where the accused would have to, beg and play. First of all, admit guilt and then throw himself on the mercy of the court. And, of course, the mercy of the court was never there. He was going to be executed anyway. But this is almost a kabuki theater rendition of those same type of Stalinist trials, only these are happening in America, and they're happening for the most trivial of reasons. People have a right to, define themselves as they wish, particularly when what they're doing is not directed at defaming other people. There's nothing defamatory about having a Confederate flag or about playing the song Dixie or having a Colonel Rebel mascot. Things like that, or having your university nicknamed Ole Miss. But you would think these were high crimes and misdemeanors, guilty of the death penalty, the way that the news media tends to carry on about.
The capital of Mississippi itself is named after Andrew Jackson, isn't it? I mean, he was the one who was behind the Trail of Tears, the genocide, of the Indians. We're definitely gonna have to. How can a majority African American city be named after Andrew Jackson?
And you're right. I mean, using their litmus test for what is and what isn't racist, I mean, you're gonna have to rename everything from anyone except for 20th century Black civil rights leaders. George Washington. Washington would have to rename the capital city if you really want to be consistent with the execution of this nonsense. But, Brad, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour break, and we're going to have a free-for-all here in the third hour. We're going to be bringing everybody up who wants to come up and be on the radio. But I want to salute the work of Brad Griffin at Occidental Descent. A parting shot, final word from you, and, of course, plug that website one more time.
Okay, the website's www.occidentaldescent.com, and I'll just say that we're planning to get back to Mississippi at some point in the future to protest what's going on there, and there'll be more on that as that develops. Thank you.
All right, everybody, let's hear a big round of applause for Brad Griffin! We'll be back with the third hour, the final hour right after this.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.